Now, let's move on to, ladies and gentlemen, first Sunday. This is the first Sunday of the month of March. Beware the aisles. Anyway, this is the month of March, and anything could happen in the White House, on Congress, or the Democrats. And we're going to discuss that with our political panel this morning. They are what we call the multi-partisan panel. They represent various party backgrounds, and they talk a lot. For instance, Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So Bush went to Europe. What does it mean?
Well, it means the Europeans have to realize that George Bush is going to be president for another four years. President of the free world, and they're just going to have to live with it.
How can it be a free world when he's...
It's getting freer every day.
Yes, sure it is. Also, we have Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. Nicholas Sawalk, will Mayor Anthony Williams run another term?
If he's smart, I think he's going to go out on a high note before the bills for the stadium come due.
You got that right. Well, they run him out of town. Also, Eric Mickelson, Green Party.
Hey, Jerry.
The Democrats have a new leader, Howard Dean. Will it mean anything?
Let's hope it means something. They could use a little bit of jolt of life here. I think Howard's going to bring that.
Are the Democrats going to buy him a pickup truck or what?
So he can put his Confederate flag
sticker in the back. I'm not going there. I just asked him if he's going to get a pickup truck. Here you go. All right. And Patrice McKinney, Democrat. Patrice, what is with Condoleezza Rice? She's running the country.
Well, Condoleezza made quite a good showing in Europe, Jerry. I have to say she did a good job.
They like the way she walks, the way she smiles, all kind of photo ops.
Well, let's hope that the substance that follows a show like that is something that holds out.
Let's get down to business. The politicians are in-house. Emily Loeffler is out today, our independent, but we'll continue on. The trip to Europe, we know it was successful. I mean, there was a lot of fanfare and everything else. Even France is siding with the United States this morning and saying, Syria, get out of Lebanon. And we want a full, withdrawal from Lebanon. What does this all mean, Patrice?
The question is France siding with the United States, or has the United States finally, President Bush finally realized that isolating the United States is not going to benefit our country? We've come around and we've decided that, yes, we've got to join the Europeans in the question of Iran and the question of Syria, because we can't go it alone. Using our own methods is something that's going to run us further into debt, cause loss of more lives. So I'm happy to see that the president finally came around, decided to join the world in dealing with these very serious problems.
I don't see it so much as joining the world as really the president seeing that we play a better bad cop if we let someone else play the good cop. And so he's trying to reopen those ties with Europe so that in cases like Iran, where we're taking a very hard line, we let the Europeans take a softer line and just kind of wait in the background with a big stick looking menacing.
But Jim Pomeroy, it's nice that we have these sort of quote-unquote PR relationships and PR deals, but things aren't so rosy in Italy this morning, where a journalist was shot in the arm after her release from the Iraqis, and her colleague, Secret Service or agent, was killed. This was because she was in an automobile after her release, being held as a hostage. She was released in the car, driving to the airport, going through a checkpoint, and she was fired upon by U.S. troops. U.S. government is saying that she was speeding. The lady says, we weren't speeding. Now, what turned into be a welcoming party in Italy has turned into a big ride or a big turnout of people anti-America.
Well, you can go to European countries and find a group of folks that are going to be anti-American regardless of any provocation. Look, the good part of the story is she was released. And let's not forget, the terrorists felt they had to release. Now, hold on. I'm not going to necessarily come down too hard until there's an investigation and we find out what the facts are, which there should be, on a group of American soldiers who have a car in a country where terrorists are driving car bombs into them every day, and you have a car coming at them speeding.
The guys who are under
attack every day thought she was speeding. Now an investigation will find out, was she speeding or was she not? But, you know, I think we need to reserve judgment until we see what the
facts
are.
Were the guys trigger happy? Were the troops trigger happy?
I have to agree with Jim here. I'd like to see an investigation. I mean, under those circumstances, you can certainly understand people being a little bit anxious. So I don't know the facts of it.
Patrice McKinney.
You know, I think what we have here is a lack of coordination and communication. You know, did the American soldiers know there was somebody that was going to be headed towards the airport who had... basically, you know, this incredible status was a hostage released. You know, what is going on with our communication systems? Are we leaving our troops out there without information so that they're in a position of being trigger happy because they simply don't know what's going on?
Nicholas, can we trust Germany and can we trust France? Was this a nice little, you know, donut situation and then the president came home smiling with all roses in his eyes?
I think we can trust Germany and trust France to act in their own best interest and the best interest of a unified Europe. I think that the president has shown at least more of a willingness to try to find points of agreement with Europe and not focus on those areas where we have serious policy disagreements. I think that what's coming out of the White House now is an attempt to find those areas we agree on and work towards those and minimize those areas that we don't, which is what diplomacy is normally about. And the first 4 years were kind of an exception to that rule where we basically threw things in their face.
Well, there's an additional problem here, though, Jerry, too. Look at our trade deficit. Look at our economy. We are in a very serious situation. And this year, we need to attract at least $800 billion of European or outside of the United States capital. If we don't do that, we're going to be in very serious problems. And unless we make nice with the rest of the world at some point, you know, we're really harming ourselves.
Eric Mickelson.
Jerry, you know, another issue on the international front recently was the Canadians basically telling George Bush that they don't want the missile defense system up in, based out of Canada. And I think, you know, again, I only wish we could get some more Americans to say that this foolish project, you know, doesn't belong.
I don't want it.
Jim Homily.
Thank you.
Well, if North Korea or China or somebody just lobs a nuclear missile at us, I have a feeling you guys are going to wish that we had a missile defense system.
Yeah, but we need a missile defense system
laugh.
That works and get that is current.
What about if the Martians attack?
Get back to me in 20 years and see if you're laughing.
301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. Bill in Tacoma Park, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you doing?
Fine, my friend. Help me out.
Okay, well, I'm just curious about the whole Bush demanding Syria out of Lebanon when the bulk of the world and about, you know, at this point in time, about half the U.S. population is against the war in Iraq and wants our troops out. I think it's a lot of chutzpah on Bush's part to go to another country, say, get your troops out of there and get them out now when we're still dawdling in Iraq, losing American lives, and still, I think, angering much of the world by having our troops there. So I think it's a bit of a double standard to demand another country pull its troops out. And the second point I had to make, and then I'll hang up quickly, is I'm thinking, given how European was...
Hey, Bill, hold your second point. We want to get the first point first.
Sure, okay.
Well, the first thing is that while both Iraq and Lebanon are situations of occupation, with Syria, the demand for removal has been through peaceful protests in the street, whereas with Iraq, there are actual insurgents attacking. And I see that as a point of difference. And while I agree with the caller that we should also leave Iraq, I think that it's a lot easier to take the moral high ground and say that a country should leave when there's peaceful democratic protests than when there's car bombings and other terrorist acts.
You know, Jerry, I had a hard time hearing the listener over the roar of democratic elections spreading across the world courtesy of George Bush. So I know he's deeply concerned about the free elections in Iraq and very upset about that, but we're just going to have to keep moving on.
Bill, do you want to answer to that?
You
just want to move on to your next question.
I'm not going to make an impact on these folks. Jim Parmley said, let's see if they're laughing 20 years from now.
Okay.
we'll see about that.
All righty. 20 minutes from now.
give us 20 years. 20 years, I think you'll be very happy.
Go right ahead,
very
Bill.
Happy with Iraq.
Well, my second point wasn't even a serious point. I was just reading with fascination how Europe was just totally in love with Condoleezza Rice. So I was going to suggest to President Bush that you know, I think Holly Berry and Tara Banks are available. We could maybe send them to her.
Bring them on.
They'd be wonderful ambassadors, and who cares what they say, you know? So just long as they're walking around and looking pretty, that's all we need. That's all we need to patch up our relationship with Europe. So, and with that, I'll hang up.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Sure.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. My lines are open, my dear friends, here on Metro Talk from Clear Channel Radio here in Washington, WBIG FM 100.3 and Sports Talk 980. I'm Jerry Phillips, and here on the deck with Metro Talk at the table this morning, first Sunday political debate, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Homily, Democrat Patrice McKinney, and Eric Nicholson, Green Party. And your opinion is important, so get online and talk to us. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. Going up to 52 degrees today, going to be partly cloudy, and tomorrow, high 62, but, well, Wednesday or Tuesday, rather, we'll have some sort of cooler weather with possibly some showers. Patrice McKinney, I have to ask you, what's with Howard Dean?
Yeah.
What is he going to do to change the Democrats? Because right now, you guys look pretty bad.
Well, Jerry, I don't know. First of all, I have to disagree with that.
What are you going to run, Hillary?
You know, listen.
What do you have? Who do you have to run against George Bush?
Howard Dean.
Howard
Dean is going to continue. As we know, 2 years ago, Howard Dean really sparked the Democratic Party.
He sparked it.
An arsonist.
You know, he has shown that he stands for something, that the Democratic Party stands for something. He has been courageous, he has been strong, he has been tenacious.
Yeah, but the thing
he
about
he stands
it,
for fiscal responsibility, unlike the Republicans.
No, those are general terms. General terms. I mean, it's the same thing like Social Security. The Democrats have been beating up on George Bush about Social Security, but I have not heard a plan from you guys yet.
Well, listen, Howard.
I mean, I'm not down on Democrats this morning. It's just that
they're playing chicken on Social Security. Nobody wants to come out with a specific plan first.
Right. No, so I think they're doing a great job with Social Security because they have kind of the Democrats.
What
because
are they
it's
doing?
Become very clear to the rest of the country that George Bush's plan, that the horrible situation that we're in with Social Security is all a big show.
Well, you need to look at your polls on that because the split is right down the age divide. All the people who are over 30 think, oh, no, there's no crisis. And all the people under 30, 67% support privatization because we know we're not getting any money.
Yeah, but Nicholas, you talk about you use the word crisis now. We know that the scare tactics have been out there from the Bush administration pushing this thing. Help me out here, Eric.
Well, I think Nicholas says there's no money, it's going to be bankrupt or whatever. It would be the first time in U.S. history that the U.S. has defaulted on an obligation that it has to the residents.
Sure.
There are ways to make the system solvent. And,
exactly.
I mean, you know,
but there's a structural problem. There is a structural problem with Social Security.
Well, there always
has. And it does hit me and those of us who are under 30 more so than it will hit anyone who is over 30 right now. And if you look at the polls, it's very clear that the people who are currently getting the money, like AARP, want the system to stay the same. And the people who are looking forward to not getting any money would like some sort of structural change to handle this long-term problem. There is a long-term problem.
And there are plenty of things to do without kind of undercutting the whole system, taking, you know, this absolute benefit that
the issue with the system is that we've had to change it 2-3 times in the past, and we'll have to keep tinkering with it to keep it going. There is a structural problem with Social Security that we can fix with some benefit reductions now, but we'll have to fix it again.
We can keep tinkering, and it doesn't mean we have to undercut it, undermine it, and actually dissolve it.
Can I say something? I would like to tell everybody you can call us at 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call here on our first Sunday Political Roundtable debate.
Jerry, I know the theme of today's show has been wait for 20 years and see who's right. But in this case, you don't even have to wait 20 years. You have to wait 7 years before we start running out of money to pay the bills on this thing. And I think it's 2012. And, you know, what are we going to do in 2012 when all of a sudden, hey, all of those Social Security trust fund bonds that everyone was pretending were real, hey, we actually have to pay the bills now.
Jim Pomley,
so we got to fix Social Security.
Jim Pomley, that's a good PR scare tactic.
What are we doing in 2012?
And let's not look at this in isolation. Social Security does not exist in isolation.
Pat in Alexandria, good morning.
The whole system of taxation
good morning,
that we put in place.
Good morning, Nicholas. Thank you for the logic.
Yeah, you're welcome, Pat.
As always. I'd just like to know one thing. Mr. Parmley made a statement about how democracy is blowing up all over the world because of George Bush. Tell me where.
Afghanistan, Iraq,
we're scared to come out of the woods
the Ukraine, even the Palestinian Authority, for goodness sakes.
Right,
amen.
Yeah.
And we're going to have peace in the Middle East, everybody.
Jim.
We're going to have elections everywhere.
The only way you're going to have peace in the Middle East is if the Marines on the Syrian border make a right and go to Lebanon.
Are you advocating that?
No, I'm not advocating that because I don't want to see anybody who remembers October 23rd, 1983 going in there.
Mm. Well, let me put it this way.
The Republican regime put Marines on guard duty with dum-dum bullets, and we lost over 200-some-odd people. I don't think Mr. Bush is bringing democracy all over the world unless he has the military to go in front of him.
But it's happening.
You've mentioned Afghanistan. Gee, we went in there and lost a hell of a lot of guys. You've mentioned Iraq. Gee, we've gone in there and there's a hell of a lot of guys gone. And Iraq is delaying on their constitution, on their parliament. I mean, how long are you going to continue?
But these are small complaints compared to the overwhelming elections.
I don't think 1,500 American lives.
That's not what you were saying. That's not what you were saying. You were complaining that they're taking their time picking a prime minister. That's what you were saying.
What I was saying was the only way that supposedly democracy is coming in is if Mr. Bush stands behind our military, which is where he stood in Vietnam, too. But we won't go there.
Well, let me say, I mean, you can make a case for never, ever going to war for anything. You can make a case for not fighting World War II, not fighting any of these wars.
World War II was totally different.
But at the time, there were plenty of people who didn't want to fight World War II.
Yeah, that's
so
true. And then we had a bombing at Pearl Harbor.
And we had a bombing on September 11th. And it's very similar.
We certainly didn't. And we've known for years that they were coming after us. They'll come after us again.
Which is why we're in Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that.
Will you let Pat talk, please?
I think the next time that Jacques Chirac doesn't want to talk in English to the president, we'll be sending troops to go down the Champs-Élysées. Give me a break. Nicholas, once again, thank you for the logic on Social Security.
You're welcome,
Jerry,
Pat.
Have a lovely day.
Love you, Pat. Thank you. There you go. Pat of Alexandria. I mean, she gets it straight now. Patrice McKinney?
Yeah, I just want to comment on the elections. I think these elections are a really great thing, and we're really happy to see things shift a little bit in the Middle East. But, you know, we're not going to say that democracy is marching across the Middle East just yet. Look at Afghanistan, which we're being held up as, you know, spread of democracy in Afghanistan. We had an election, but it basically affects Kabul. I mean, the country is being run by the warlords outside of Kabul. We've got a governor. We've got a mayor of Kabul.
Our telephone number is 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. Let me hurry up to Potomac, and there's Rod on the line. Good morning, Rod.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. First, let me say I'm in the over 60 group.
Okay.
So for the age, Social Security, actually Social Security has a lot of money in it. The problem is it's all IOUs from programs like Supplemental Security, Disability Security, the Women and Infants and Children, where Congress has needed the money but has not funded the program.
Mm-hmm.
So they just take it out of Social Security. And I know I'm going to be eligible soon for Social Security, and to me, I think one of the worst things is that there's a COLA in it. It should be a fixed annuity. When it was originally set up, it was set up as a supplement. To your own retirement.
And you notice, Rod, we don't hear that word very much anymore. Supplement.
That's right.
To respond to Rod, it's become a core part of people's retirement planning, which is a mistake for a safety net program. But the point that you make is really, this is not a scare tactic. What is happening right now is that right now the Social Security taxes are a revenue to the government that's over and above what it actually takes to pay out. What Jim's talking about in 2012 is that we're going to have to actually put money from other things into Social Security programs to pay for those, in addition to the stuff that we're doing now. And given the budget crisis as we've been in, I don't think that we can do that.
Okay. Ron, hold your point. Don't leave me, okay?
Okay.
Suzanne, is down in Waldorf, Maryland. And Suzanne, I want to get you in on this. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having the show. I wanted to make a statement, and then I had a question for your people there on your panel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you have a good cross-section of men and women on your panel. I know they're there every month. They seem to be very knowledgeable about the issues. They seem to be very intelligent. They also seem to be very young, like under 30.
Thank you. Suzanne, you don't know what you're saying.
Maybe not. I don't know. That's just the way.
Sound young? Do they? Patrice walks around with a cane. Jim Pomley comes in an ambulance.
Okay, well, that was my.
This libertarian over here, we don't know how he gets here.
Intelligent. And I wanted to know about what age group they came in, and I think that it should be a good. Maybe it already is a good cross section of age.
Let me say this. All the panels on Metro Talk, we're very proud to say all of the panels, not just this panel. And you guys have been with us about 4 years now, almost.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years. We try to make it a balance, and we're very serious about that. Even the ladies panel, you know, the third Sunday panel.
Right.
All of them have varying backgrounds, ethnicity, very different, very diverse. And it's the same thing with this panel. But the age-wise on this panel, the youngest would be what, Eric?
And Nick's the youngest.
Nicholas?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest.
I'm the only one. I think I'm the only one on the panel that's under 30.
Under 30. You're under 30.
I am under 30.
But you look like you're over 40. I mean, you know.
It's hard living.
But everybody else on the panel, they're medium age.
Okay. That's fine. I was just going to suggest that if they're not,
some old folks.
Jerry's under 30.
Rod is still on the line. Rod, you can let go if you want to not get into this, because you already said you're in your 60s.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
I'm a little bit older, so
there you
okay.
Go. Thanks, Rod. Nice talking with you.
Okay, thank you. See ya.
Suzanne, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you. See ya.
All right. That's what I love about people in politics, you know. Politics, what is the term? Politics is local?
All politics is local.
Right. All politics is local. Ed in Arlington, good morning to you, my friend.
Hey, good morning, and I want to say I really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Okay, two things. One quick point on Social Security. I think there is a problem. Don't like Bush's approach to it. So I don't want to discuss that right now. But I did want to make a comment about what one of your panelists said, that the bombing of the World Trade Towers, right, in New York, caused the war to start. Well, we're not, there's been no connection to Iraq with that. And one of your panelists said that was the reason that we're fighting there.
I understand what you're saying, sir. What I said was that 9/11 was essentially the same as December 7th, 1941.
Well,
essentially the same. We were attacked. We were asleep, and we were attacked.
Not the same.
And we were attacked by an evil force, and we are going around the world to rid it of that evil force.
Go right ahead, Ed.
It's not the same at all, because we weren't never attacked. We never even caught the person who did it, and Iraq was never associated with that.
This has been an ongoing attempt by the Republicans, and I mean, it's been going on since the tragedy itself, to basically use a powerful metaphor, and that's the World War II metaphor.
They scared the election.
Pearl Harbor represents the same as September 11th. Saddam was the same as Hitler. You know, trying to use these similar kinds of very powerful images in the American mind and basically corrupt them for their use. And I mean, obviously, September 11th and Saddam are important things to consider on their own terms, but let's be honest about the way that we deal with them.
I'm taking a broader view of this, though. It is very broad. We're talking about worldwide terrorism. We're talking about a cancer that is in different parts of the body, and we're going around the world, going around the body, and we are ridding it of this cancer.
But the real issue is there was terrorist factions in Iraq before 9/11, and now it is a breeding ground for terrorism. That's what we had been saying
Ed, don't leave the conversation. Hold on. Let's get Mike in on this. Mike is up in Gaithersburg. Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Fine.
I was calling about something different.
Oh, okay, Mike. Hold on the line, Mike. Don't leave. Ed, you got the last say on this.
Okay, I'm just glad I stirred up the pot. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mike in Gaithersburg, good morning.
To you and the panel.
Go right ahead.
But what I was calling about, and I'm surprised it hasn't been talked about this morning, is about all the high oil prices and it's just, of course, this is all coming out of the Middle East. What is our government going to do about that? Because it's affecting everything.
You and me, buddy.
Exactly.
I think the caller brings up a really good point. And I was interested to see President Bush taking a four-decade look at the solvency of Social Security. I wish we could get the president to take a 2 or 3 decade look at our energy policy and say, how are we going to get off this Middle East fix of oil? What are we going to do to address, our making our energy consumption more self-sufficient and be more energy autonomous? And I don't see the president taking that step.
Can I ask you a question, Mike?
Yes.
What kind of car do you drive?
Cadillac.
You do? Is it nice? I mean, it's Cadillac.
Why are you getting personal with Mike?
Well, no, the reason I'm getting personal, and I honestly support Mike's right to drive whatever he wants, is I think that one of the things that we can do about oil policy that we have a power to do as individuals is look at the kind of cars that we drive and look at how we...
So he should stop driving his Cadillac?
No, I'm not saying he should stop driving his Cadillac. I'm saying that one of the ways that it affects us, one of the ways we can change it, is by what we drive and how much gas that takes. You're going to feel the hit of an oil price more if you drive a bigger vehicle than if you drive a smaller one. This is something that you have power over in your own life.
Yeah, but Eric, I know where you're going with that.
It's a bigger issue than the car.
The host is talking. Nick, I have a problem with what you're saying because I feel this way. If I go out and buy a Jeep or if I go out and buy a Cadillac, it has nothing to do with the gasoline station down the street from me where every week I see that sign, clink, 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 $1.99. Clink, 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 $2.99.
What it has to do with, though, is you have control over what kind of vehicle you drive. You don't have control over what kind of foreign policy the president pursues. So take control of your own life.
And not buy the Cadillac.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy the Cadillac. I was looking at a 61 Lincoln the other day, but...
Well, you're talking about a gas burner. Mike, is that Cadillacs satisfactory to you?
Yeah, I mean...
I'll turn your radio down, Mike.
I don't have a radio. That's the speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Go right ahead. What were you saying?
Well, I mean, you talk about a 61 Lincoln, you talk about something 8 miles of a gallon.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and the government has mandated certain standards, for mileage on all these vehicles, no matter what size they are or what brand or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I drive a Cadillac, so what?
I'm not saying you shouldn't drive a Cadillac.
In fact, go ahead, drive a Cadillac. But all we're saying is if you're driving a Cadillac, it's hard to call into a radio show and tell us that the president doesn't have an energy policy.
Come on, Jim Connolly, that's ridiculous.
Well, our energy policy is everyone stop totally driving Cadillacs, I guess.
How about an SUV that gets 10 miles over?
That's right. What I'm saying. If someone wants to call in driving an electric car and complain about the energy policy, you have more of a say. I mean, all of us can cut back on our energy use on our own.
I go along with Eric. I think that something needs to be done with plans on energy for the future. Thank you very much, Mike. Nice talking to you, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye. Thanks for calling. Stu in Bethesda, good morning.
Hey, Jerry. Good morning. Good morning, panel. How are you all today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good morning.
Not bad. Jerry, first off, one of the callers a little while ago said something about the IOUs for Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, the gentleman is correct. Social Security has become a Christmas tree. However, those IOUs are paying interest as regular Treasury bills. So it's not like we're getting zero back from them. You know my feelings on Social Security anyway. Afghanistan and Iraq, we've got to remember Afghanistan and Iraq are two different things. Afghanistan, the Taliban were harboring and supporting Al-Qaeda. That's the reason we went there, was to knock Al-Qaeda out as much as we could, and we did a hell of a job there. Whether it's being run by warlords outside of Kabul or not, you still had free elections there, and you had an awful lot of people vote in them for the first time.
Stu, hold your point. Let's get Johnny in Silver Spring. Don't leave me, Stu.
No problem.
Johnny, Stu, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Johnny in Silver Spring, get into the action. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? I apologize. I have to go back to the point about it's insulting to the intelligence about asking a car driver that he should now lower his opinion on whatever kind of car he wants to drive, et cetera. I mean, that's just re-victimizing the victim.
Let him finish.
You know what? It's the equivalent of telling a battered wife that she brings it on herself.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
Absolutely not. No, he's driving a Cadillac because he likes a Cadillac. Cadillacs are great cars. I think he's a lucky man to have a Cadillac.
Will you back off from the microphone? We don't have that much equipment around here for you to be yelling and carrying
on. The Cadillac of microphones.
Eric, please.
Jerry, I just have to respond to it.
I mean, the point being very simply, okay, this is what happens when America messes up international policy. Don't put this on the blame of somebody who chooses to drive even a gas guzzler.
Right.
Okay? Because what you're talking about, if America even switched their habits, to lower gas habits in terms of car, it wouldn't make a hill of beans difference in terms of the overall price of gasoline.
Absolutely, it would.
Can I get a third voice in here? The price of oil at this time is being set by the open market. The president cannot affect that unless he opened up the spigots on the couple of hundred million barrels that we've got in our security reserve and drop that. The problem is they've done it from time to time. They've thrown a quarter million barrels in on a day, and that doesn't mean squat.
Okay. Well, why do we not hear anyone in the administration address the fact that before we got involved overseas in this war, and everything, gas was in the $1.40 range.
Right.
How come that's not addressed? I mean, the untold costs, I mean, it's heinous enough what we're losing in human life, but the untold costs and the far-reaching effect that this is going to have for years to come isn't even being addressed.
The price of gasoline was going up, and besides that,
you can't put a generic statement like that. It was going up.
Can I finish?
I'm also going to die. It doesn't mean I want to.
Okay, Johnny and Stu, love you guys. I think both of you made your point. But, Johnny, thank you very much. I really support what you're saying because it's like this. Every Christmas or every holiday, I notice the gas down the street. See, I'm just down the street guy. I don't know about all this oil barrels and all. I'm just a down the street guy. And all I know is that the gas station down the street from me every holiday will go up 2 cents. 3 cents, and then when the holiday is over, it'll go down. And when, June comes, when I'm ready to take my vacation, all I know is that oil and gasoline will go up 10 cents. You understand what I'm saying, Johnny?
Absolutely. And why is it that prices rise and escalate so much faster than they come down?
Thank you very much, Johnny. Thank you very much, Stu.
Supply and demand, my friends.
Jerry, while I certainly agree, like I said earlier, with having a long-term energy policy, I also agree that one of the foremost things that Americans can do to help reduce our dependence on foreign oil and other sources is to promote energy efficiency and energy conservation.
Can I make a clarification?
Very quickly.
Okay.
You've got 5 seconds.
I'm not blaming anyone who drives any kind of car. I'm saying that as an individual, what you have control over is your choices.
You made your point. Okay, let's go to Maryland, guys. We have a solution to the energy crisis of America. If we let the illegal slot machines, which the Washington Post has reported on this past week, if they continue to operate, maybe we'll have enough money to buy some of those barrels of oil. In other words, Governor Ehrlich is closer to his slot machines because the House under Speaker Bush, has now come one notch closer to saying, we want slot machines. What about that, Mr. Eric?
This is a really, really interesting situation. Yes, Speaker Bush did get the slots through the House, but it's with huge caveats. Basically, it could be put in 4 different counties. 2 of the counties have zoning regulations which would not permit slot machines to go in them. It, basically, they'd end up going into the racetracks at Laurel.
Is there a hangar in Prince George's County? They're saying you deal with us before you get a statewide anything.
This whole thing has been turned into a big political football between Mike Miller and Michael Bush arguing over which proposal is going to go through. The governor just wants something to happen. And now the counties are weighing in, as counties should, and saying we want something to happen for us.
The governor, Patrice, wants something to happen, but a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, Mr. Governor, what happened to the monies going to schools? What happened to the fact that you're going to protect our neighborhoods? People in Baltimore are complaining because they want to put one in Baltimore Harbor. And then there are those who are saying, what's the connection to racetracks? The governor says, my way or no way.
Absolutely, and this has kind of become a not-in-my-backyard kind of issue. People are for slot machines as long as they're not in the backyard. I think the Washington Post had an excellent editorial this week discussing the sleaze factor that's likely to follow any slot machine proposal, and I think that it's definitely going to be an issue in the upcoming race for governor.
I don't think there's any moral high ground in Maryland. I mean, there's not a lot of, like you're saying, there's no sleaze factor in playing Keno for the Maryland lottery in a bar.
I'm not going to get into that.
No, there's some sleaze already in Maryland, sleaze. And they already have
they're
their own gambling.
And they're doing sleaze money out of it, too. Keno, boy. eat your pancakes and play Keno at the same time. Moving on. ladies and gentlemen.
You know where Jerry was for breakfast.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the more exciting. This is going to be a heck of a political year coming up. And this is really good. You guys really got a job for another year because the local races will now take front page. one particular local race will be the mayor, all race in the District of Columbia. Already, Mayor Anthony Williams has alluded to the fact that he wants to go home to his family, and he does not necessarily, he'd like to have more time with the family. Tom Sherwood, my good colleague and buddy and friend. Yeah, sure, Tom. Anyway, my good buddy over there at Channel 4 has been reporting on this, and he's doing, he's been following this an awful lot, saying that the possibility that the mayor may not run. Tom might be listening. If you are, Tom, give me a call. But anyway, Jim Pomeroy, what do you think about Mayor Anthony Williams? Will he run? And if he does not run, who will run?
Well, I think, you know, Mayor Williams, for the faults that he does have, has been a pretty solid mayor, and I think he gets maligned a lot. But wait till you see the folks the Democrats have on deck. Let the graft begin. I mean, we are talking about a group of folks that, you know, put your hands, cover your wallets, because these folks are coming. It's a scary thing.
Who are they?
You know, one of them didn't pay his MCI sweet
right.
bill. The other ones won't. Some of the other ones won't disclose their the donations that they're getting and are blocking legislation
well,
to force them to do
has.
So.
He's thinking
he's
about
a,
running.
Yeah,
some there are varying gradations of
right.
it, but you know, quite frankly,
that's not violation
compare,
at all.
Compare depends on what the word is, but it is means. But the here's the thing: whether it's against the law or not, you're looking at a group of folks who you know are salivating over the potential graft that you can have in the District of Columbia.
Okay.
And I'm afraid we're going to return to the bad old days in D.C. of huge mismanagement. There's plenty of mismanagement in D.C. now, but Mayor Williams has done a solid job. And I think that we're looking. The next mayor is people are going to look back on Mayor Williams and say, you know what, he did a pretty good job of keeping the government running well.
Do you think that's possible, Merrick?
Well, I think Nicholas brought up a good point early on, is that, you know, the mayor has done some good things in this past term. He's done some questionable things with regards to the baseball stadium and whatnot. But, you know, it may be that during the next term is when those bills come due, and it's going to be a lot less pleasant during that period than it was sort of getting the fanfare for...
Let me ask you, Patrice, there's talk in the neighborhoods of Washington that the possibility... the good mayor, Tony Williams, thank you very much. Tony Williams really may be, boosted up, if I can use that terminology, to a big federal job. There has been talk that people like him in the White House, and they may pull this little man and put him someplace else.
Well, that's interesting. Jerry, but I think what's going on in D.C. is that people, generally, Anthony Williams has done a really good job in many aspects of developing the city. However, they have the serious problem of housing cost and schools. And I think the city right now is ready to address those issues and wants that to be the priority in administration.
We just knocked off six people in Southeast this weekend. I mean, this past
okay,
week.
We've got
you
crime.
Did?
Yeah.
I didn't.
No, there's serious problems on the streets of Washington, D.C.
Crime is still a
you
big
know,
problem in
the
D.C.
The city looks good. We've got a baseball stadium. You know, we've got all the
no,
bells
you don't
and whistles.
Have a baseball stadium yet.
We've got a baseball
team. We've got a contract for a baseball
we've got a baseball
yeah,
team.
Right. You don't
and
have
we've
stadium
got the
yet.
Bells and whistles of a first-class U.S. city. However, we've got... You know, rising crime. We've got problem of rising housing prices, and our schools are on the decline. And I think this has become the major focus of the people
and
in the city.
And next week we'll be talking about health care.
Well, which we're going to have to elect a Republican mayor then.
With the shift in the
well,
council.
Carol Schwartz would love that. Carol Schwartz would love
it. Bring Carol
but
on.
No,
I'd love to see that.
Not Carol Schwartz. We have another name that could come into the litany of
Catania?
Names. Catania. David Catania is now independent.
He's
not a Republican
guy.
Though.
Yeah, the deal with the mayor is he won his baseball thing, albeit by falling on his sword and half the council disappearing. And I think he would be wise to get out while he's ahead before those bills come due.
We've got about 2 minutes. Anybody wants to get in on the conversation, we still have lines open at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. If you have a question or a comment that you make, we have about a minute and a half that we can get you in, because the panelists, they've all talked out. They have no more to say about anything. And I think it's time for them to shut up and go home anyway. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding.
Don't drive a Cadillac.
This is a fun way of doing public affairs. But in all sincerity, I do think that Mayor Anthony Williams has not made a decision yet, according to his office. But
But if he was going to run again, Jerry, I think he would have decided by now and would have said something. I think that this silence is indication that he's not
going to
run.
That he's not going to run.
Can I give a compliment?
Yes, quickly.
I'd like to compliment Howard Dean for the willingness to go into red states and actually open up a dialogue with the voters. Even though he's not right on all the issues, the fact that he's actually bringing the discussion to those states, I think is a good thing for America.
Andy, you got 5 seconds in Annapolis. Go ahead.
Approve the slots. Maryland has a lottery. It's ludicrous. The Maryland State Lottery makes $500 million a year for the state. The gambling's here, and I think Bush is way off base. Every people that come into my store, and I happen to be one of the top agents in the state, they all want it. They all go to West Virginia. They go to Dover. They meet at my store before they go. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous, and it's just not fair.
Thank you, Mr. Andy. You got the last word in Annapolis, my friend. Thank you very much to the panelists this morning. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Norman Howard Dean. And also Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Hey, guys, have a good one.
Talk to you
next month. Yeah. With that, my friend, I got to thank everybody who helped to put it together. And certainly want to remind you next week for our special health care. Steve Solomon is our technical producer. Carolina Restrepo is our researcher and administrator. Shaheen Shaheen, public affairs associate. Lee Salkin, our American University journalism intern. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a WBIG 100.3 and a Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Till next time, much peace, much love.